My responsibility is to make this place great again.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
What a rip!
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, happy Saturday on this May 9th, 2026 episode of the Pistols Firing Podcast. We got Mother's Day tomorrow, very important day in both of our households. How you doing on this Saturday, though?
Good, yeah. Good weekend. It's a beautiful day. Not golfing today, which is a little bit of a bummer. The wind's blowing like 6 miles an hour. It's beautiful out. But we're taking our daughter and our niece. We're going to run up to the Chicken Shack in Arcadia tonight and hang out up there. They got a nice outdoor area. The kids can run around and play and do all that. So, yeah, we're having a really good weekend. And then we've got some Mother's Day plans tomorrow, but my wife might be listening through the door, so I won't reveal those at this time.
Yeah, don't reveal them. Don't no spoiler alerts here. We kind of did a makeshift Mother's Day. We did a little bit of makeshift Mother's Day kind of dinner. I just realized our mics had not been on that entire time. Welcome into the show. We are back at it. So a little bit behind the scenes here for the gang. Thanks for everyone who's joining live on YouTube. Apologies to our audio listeners that will be listening to this after the fact. But there's been an echo on the intro, and there's been some loyal commenters really wanting me to get rid of that echo. Well, for some reason, our mics will reverberate on the intro, so I muted our mics and forgot to unmute the mics, but we are back at it officially. Colby basically just said he was not trying to spoil Mother's Day plans before they happen because his wife's in the next room. I'm trying not to as well. But Colby, we did a makeshift dinner with my parents and Sydney, my wife, and our two stepdaughters last night. After our I-9 volleyball game, have I mentioned on the show I've been coaching I-9 volleyball for 12-year-olds?
You said something about it last week, but we didn't get into it near as much as I'd like to get into it. Coaching youth sports, I'm not there yet. My daughter's 4, but I have to imagine that it's in my future, and it seems like it would be equal parts amazing, fun, and frustrating.
It's very, very, very it's very rewarding, and it's been so long since I've really been in a competitive setting. You know, I play golf, you know, I'll play for money, I just don't get that. I mean, of course I want to win, but I don't get that like team kind of competitiveness anymore at all. And I don't have kids of my own, so I'd never coached before. This is my first real shot at coaching. I was coaching my stepdaughter, and we were not good at all most of the season, especially to start the year. And we've made just leaps and bounds improvement. And we actually won a game last night. And I was basically the meme. You know the meme, Frank Beamer, when it's 0-0 and he like is lifting his hand? We won a game and I did this. And I've never been in that situation before. I forgot you had to win by 2. So it was 25-24. The other coach was like, you got to win by two. I was like, okay, fine. Sorry, I've never been in this scenario before. I was a little early celebration, but we did take it home. So I'm on a bit of a competitive high this weekend.
That's awesome. You're the Mark Dagnall of the show. I mean, you turned it around, it sounds like. If they were bad and now they're winning games, that's coaching, Carson. That's coaching.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I've done a decent job with them, and they've been really great girls, so it's been a lot of fun. But I think we're gonna hand Nora off to the real volleyball coaches here this summer. So it's been fun while it's lasted, but we've got a lot to get to, man. Kenny Gajewski going full Mike Gundy, ripping the Big 12. He didn't say it makes me want to puke, but he basically got there at some points. And then baseball is just white hot. Softball season comes to an end, but some controversy there. A bit of football news as well as golf, too. But as you know, this show is sponsored by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop shop over there on Campus Corner up in Stillwater. We appreciate Chris's sponsoring the podcast, as always. They do such a fantastic job there. Been in Stillwater for a very long time and been a sponsor of this show for, gosh, more than 10 years now. I think they were with us from the very beginning. So we appreciate Chris's being a longtime supporter. And if you're in Stillwater, be sure to support them. Support your local businesses. And Chris has been around a long time, and we appreciate them being part of the show as long as they have been as well. So Colby, let's get right to, I think, what is the main event here. Kenny Gajewski, I mean, he didn't just come out and just start, you know, lambasting the Big 12, but for people who aren't aware, Ruby Malin was voted the pitcher of the year in the Big 12. Oklahoma State was made aware of that she won the honors of pitcher of the year. And then after the fact, the Big 12 named co-pitchers of the year, along with Canada over there from Texas Tech, the high-priced NIL transfer from Stanford, who OSU did recruit. Kenny Gajewski in his comments reminded everyone that OSU came second in that race for her honors, meaning that he didn't have any bias towards her. He wanted her on his team. But first, Colby, let me play the soundbite from Kenny. I chopped it up a little bit because it's about 3 minutes long, so I chopped up some sections. But here's Kenny Gajewski and what he had to say when asked about, because he sent out a tweet, Colby, saying, hey, let's make these votes public. Where did this come from? I think if we made the votes public, it might be a different story. So here's Kenny after the game when asked about it.
Whatever the coaches vote should be what it is, period. We received an email on Wednesday or Tuesday, I think it was. It listed all the winners. Ruby was the outright pitcher. And then I got an email at 10 o'clock at night from my SID Surge that there's now a co-pitcher. That's not right. I don't appreciate it. It's not the way we should be doing our business here. When I asked the question why, I got an answer of we looked at it holistically. You're gonna have to explain to everybody out there what that means. It's not right. Holistically wasn't on my voting sheet. It asked who the best pitcher was. I voted for Nyjah, because I can't vote for her, okay? And that's why I said, make this public. I have a lot of coaches in this league. I didn't have to call them. They called me. They're not happy. I'm not happy, and it's not right. And it's nothing against Nyjah or Texas Tech. It's what the coaches voted for. So make them public. I think we're probably not wanting to do that, to be very honest. I don't have any sour grapes about Co. I have sour grapes that my kid was told that she was outright, and then we changed that. For whatever reason, you guys can write about that, okay? But it's not right. It's not fair to her. It wouldn't be fair if it was Nyjah and then they changed that. It's not right, okay? A vote is a vote. Why did my staff spend an hour and a half voting if our vote doesn't matter? And that's what I'm being told. Your vote doesn't matter. If they'd have put out Co from the start, wouldn't hear a word. So until we get this right, severely disappointed in that whole situation and whoever's in charge of doing that.
There you go, Colby. Kenny Gajewski letting it be known that was not right. That was not a good situation. And I think he could have gone even further and just ripped him even harder than he even did. I thought he was being very diplomatic in the way he phrased things. He was very complimentary to Canada, the other pitcher, as well. Colby, I'll get your thoughts first, and then I'll have more to say about it. But just again, what are we doing? What are we doing, Big 12? What was your thoughts on Kenny's comments and really the situation at large?
Yeah, I thought the way he handled it was perfect, because he didn't come off as some raging lunatic who was just mad at, you know, a perceived snub of his players getting sole honors or anything like that. He came at it from a perspective of like, we voted, right? We voted. And you told us what the results of the vote were. And clearly, somebody in that room at the conference office, look, I don't know if they got a phone call from somebody in Lubbock who spent a lot of money to get Kennedy from Palo Alto to Lubbock, Texas. I don't know what happened. But for the vote to happen, have Oklahoma State be told that Ruby Malin is the pitcher of the year, and then find out later in the day, well, we're going to split it. We're going to split it. Carson, it reeks of a phone call to me. Kenny Gajewski handled this incredibly well. Problem, if in fact Ruby Malin was voted the sole Big 12 pitcher of the year, and then the league office decided to turn around and make that a co-honor. Respectfully, it's not a co-honor if one girl wins the vote and one doesn't. And it seems like that's what happened here. Good for Gajewski for going to bat for Ruby Malin. She deserved that honor. She's been unbelievable. She's been great in the biggest games of the season here down the stretch. They went out early in the Big 12 tournament, but they had massive wins over the last few weeks, most notably against Oklahoma. They also beat Texas in that stretch, had a good little run in the Big 12 there where they were just dominating people, 9-0, 9-1, 7-0, just one after another. So, yeah, I've got a big, big problem if somebody in the league office decided the award as opposed to the coach. The coach's vote deciding the award, and I'd really love to know what happened behind the scenes in a matter of hours to go from Ruby Malin being the Big 12 Pitcher of the Year to Ruby Malin and Ajari Kennedy being the co-Big 12 Pitchers of the Year. By the way, you can't vote for your own players, and Kenny G said that. He said he voted for the girl from Texas Tech. Let's make it public. Let's make it public and see who voted for who. This is not a good look for the Big 12.
And for me, I have covered the Big 12 for a very, very long time. My TV career started in 2008. And Colby, I have just a laundry list of things that the Big 12 has just botched and made themselves look ridiculous ever since I started in the media. And let me just go through a couple of them that come to mind. This really reminds me the most of... Do you remember, does everyone watching on YouTube, is everyone listening on the podcast, does everyone remember One True Champion? They put together this entire marketing campaign. They put billboards up in all the stadiums. They put it everywhere. And they play that season out, and they end up handing out two Big 12 trophies as co-Big 12 champions. I believe that was the Baylor-TCU year. And... that's before we even get to the ridiculousness of the year before, where Oklahoma sheepishly, after getting beat on their home field by Kansas State, had the nerve to claim co-Big 12 champions. That's where this whole one true champion thing even came about, how ridiculous the league looked in retrospect, giving out two trophies when the two teams played head-to-head. And oh, by the way, Kansas State won on the road. There wasn't even this silly LSU-Alabama argument that the other team had to go on the road, so it wasn't fair. So that's what this league has always been about, making stupid decisions that make them look absolutely ridiculous to everyone else. I distinctly remember the Big 12 Baseball Championship. I believe it was Texas won it, and you've got – oh, what was his name? It wasn't Bob Bowlesby. It was this guy who used to run communications for the Big 12. I really wish I knew his name, because he hands the trophy to Texas and tells them, go win the national championship, while another team from the Big 12 is standing 20 feet from him that's going to play in the national tournament to try to win a national championship. It's just, there's several things that just stick in my mind. I've forgotten probably six or seven more, Colby, but this is just the latest in another line of this conference being so dysfunctional, so reactionary, and once again, OSU gets hosed. And I really don't want to go on this angle that OSU just gets hosed by the NCAA, by the Big 12, but you mean to tell me if Ruby Malin played for Texas Tech with Cody Campbell standing over her shoulder, that this would have happened? I fail to believe that. And that's where I'm at. It's just latest in a long line of stupid decisions.
Yeah, I mean, here's the simple scenario. If Najari Kennedy won the vote outright, would we have co-Big 12 Pitchers of the Year?
No.
I think we all know the answer. No, of course we wouldn't. She'd just be the Big 12 Pitcher of the Year. But because Ruby won the vote... that doesn't sit right with some people. Clearly, it's obvious. It's obvious. It's blatant. They can't love that Gajewski came out and made all this public. They can't love that this has become such a big talking point at a time of the year where the Big 12 is like, seriously, we got ourselves in hot water in May? Like, we're 4 months removed from football and we won't be back to football for 4 months and we're in hot water? What are we doing? And that's a great question for the people in the league office. What are you doing? The One True Champion, by the way, thank you for bringing that up. I love ripping on that any chance possible. It cost a Big 12 team a spot in what I believe was the first 14 playoff. It was the Cardale Jones year. I think it was 2014. It was the Cardale Jones year. Ohio State gets in over Baylor and TCU at four. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure TCU beat Baylor that year. It was the Trayvon Boykin year, and TCU should have been named the conference champion. TCU should have been in at four, and they should have had a chance to compete for the national championship that Ohio State won in their place. This obviously is not at that level of a screw-up, and your Mark has done a lot of great things with the Big 12. We could easily be sitting here looking at a couple of Washington states and Oregon states floating around somewhere. I don't think Oklahoma State would have been in that position. But, you know, Kansas State, Iowa State, who knows what happens. Your Mark has done some great things. The conference overall, I think, has been really steady, really solid, really stable for the past several years. This is a blip, and this is something that nationally it's not going to register. Might not register outside Stillwater or Lubbock, but I promise Oklahoma State fans of the spring sports, fans of softball, are going to remember this whenever we talk about Ruby Malin being the Big 12 co-pitcher of the year.
Yep. TCU lost to Baylor that year, and the score was 61 to 58.
So flip that.
but it's a valid point, because I think everyone thought TCU was the best team, but they played on the road. There's that old played on the road scenario, blah, blah, blah. But the Big 12, once again, just makes themselves look like a second-rate conference. And they're gutless, too, by the way. Eric Bailey from the Tulsa World has reached out to the Big 12 for comment, reacting to what Kenny Gajewski had to say about their process, about their voting process, and the fact they named co-Big 12 pitchers when they had told Oklahoma State staff that there was not co. There was an individual winner. And they've yet to comment on that. And look, I think Brett Yormark's doing a lot of really good things to get the Big 12 noticed, to generate interest. There's some private equity stuff going around, which we'll talk about. But clearly, the final decision-making process still needs a lot of work from this conference, because it makes you look Bush League. It makes you look like you can be swayed by politics. If this was not a Texas Tech player, would this have happened with Cody Campbell's money, with all the money NILs they got there in Lubbock? I fail to believe that. And this is why everyone's left this conference, because they let OU and Texas decide everything, which that is not how conferences should work. Texas and OU, and OU too, everyone loves to blame Texas for running everybody off, but OU supported Texas in virtually every decision they made other than the Longhorn Network. OU was right there saying, nope, us and Texas getting a bigger slice of the pie than the rest of you, and that's why everyone left. And so, as much as there is new leadership in the conference with your Mark and company, clearly some of that old DNA of being a Bush League conference is still there, and it's disappointing.
Maybe Sorsby had a future on Kennedy to be the Big 12 pitcher of the year and needed to cash that ticket.
Maybe. Like, now I'm concerned about the Sorsby decision. Like, I mean, I think if this was an OSU quarterback, and again, I don't want to be this woe is me OSU person that thinks the Oklahoman only writes about OU and that everyone's out to get us. But man, you just take stock of everything that's happened with the Dez Bryant thing. I don't even have to go down the list with Mike Boynton and everything in the basketball program. Like, if that quarterback played at Oklahoma State, is there any doubt that Sorsby would be suspended the rest of next season and have to go to the NFL immediately? Like, now there's some doubt. He's hiring this hotshot attorney. I don't know. Maybe I'm just beaten down from all the things that have gone against OSU with policy and policymakers. But, man, that's just kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, real quick in the chat on YouTube, Miles Jenkins says, lots of interesting decisions. We're not that far removed from the LED court. Yeah, I don't think we even talked much about the LED court because Oklahoma State basketball wasn't really doing anything. Well, what's going on there? Not everything has to be improved upon. I think the playing surface that basketball has been being played on, I mean, I don't know if it's been since Mr. Naismith invented the game, but for as long as I can remember, hardwood has been working just fine. Not everything has to be improved upon. Yeah, that was another swing and a miss here recently from the Big 12.
Didn't it, like, not work? Didn't they have to shut it down?
Well, yeah, players were slipping and sliding all over the place. There was injury concern because the footing was different. The feel was different. The bounce of the ball was different. It just somebody in a boardroom came up with this idea, and then they put high-level athletes out there to run and cut and jump on this floor that's different from every other floor they've ever played on in their lives.
Yeah, that, I mean, hey, look, I'm all for trying new things. So you're not going to get them all right. I mean, but I'm with you. I mean, we play on 100-year-old maple floor in Stillwater, and it still works fine. But where were we? Yeah, so softball does lose in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament. They'll have to wait on seeding, and that's kind of where they're at. But again, Ruby Malin deserves all the credit and the honors. She rightly deserved to be the individual winner of that award, and we certainly would support Kenny Gajewski on that. But really disappointing from the Big 12. Not as disappointing, though. Baseball. They've split so far with Arizona State, and it looked like they were going to go down last night. I turned it off. They were down going into the ninth inning, and I should have kept the game on, Cole, because they scored 6 runs in the ninth to take down Arizona State. And, oh, by the way, they've won, I believe, 10 of their last 13, I believe it was. I'll pull this up here in a second. But make no mistake, Colby, OSU baseball, white hot going into May as we approach postseason. Everyone can calm down. Ryan Traub, our loyal Twitter follower, breathe in, breathe out. We don't have to fire Josh Holliday. This is what you and I were preaching, right, Colby? Patience. It's a long season, and don't look now, but they're slated to be a 2 seed. Right now they're being projected to be a 2 seed in the A&M regional, but OSU white hot as we go into postseason.
Yeah, winning takes care of everything, and I think you accidentally said that they've split with Arizona State. They've only had one down there. Next week is the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. They won game one of the series with Arizona State, got another one tonight at 8, and then another one Sunday at 3. Those are Central time. Carson, it's hard to even remember when Oklahoma State was 8-10 in conference play, and there were serious questions about the state of the program. I mean, that feels like a long time ago after you go sweep Texas Tech in Lubbock and then you come home and sweep a TCU team that had won 7 in a row when they came into Stillwater. And then you go in Arizona State last night, Arizona State playing good baseball. You're down 6-3 going into the ninth. What do you do when you're down 6-3 going into the ninth, Carson? Well, you just hang 6 on them in the top and then shut them down in the bottom and you get game one. I mean, this just makes it where you need a split now, and you've come away from that series with another series win to potentially have yourselves at 16-11 in conference play with one series to go in the season, guaranteeing that you'll finish above 500 in conference play after you were basically underwater for the first 18 games of conference play. I mean, after that series loss to Kansas, you were 8-10 in conference, and it looked like, gosh, are they ever going to be able to dig themselves out of this hole? They've got tough series coming up. This might just be a lost year, and no way. And as much as everybody wanted to criticize Josh Holliday 6 weeks ago, let's give that staff a ton of credit because this team never quit. They never mailed it in. They never just accepted the fact that they were going to be a sub 500 team in the Big 12 and have a so-so season. There was just no quit in this team. And like you said, this is a team now, Carson. It's about when you peak in baseball. When are you healthy? When do you peak? Do you get key strikeouts in key moments? Can you hit with runners in scoring position? Situational baseball? Carson, I don't know. You got Colin Ritchie hitting bombs. You've got the guys coming out of the bullpen doing just enough. Could this team go on a run? They've had a ton of success at the Big 12 tournament, less so in the regionals and super regionals. But I think this is a team that Oklahoma State fans are really starting to fall in love with because of the way they battled through a tough start to the season. And now they've come on and look like one of the better teams in the conference. So hopefully they can get one of these next two, take a couple from Arizona next weekend, and go into the Big 12 tournament with some momentum because this team, they look dangerous right now.
They do look dangerous. They've won, like I said, 10 of the last 13 games. They're now 32-17 on the year, 15-10 in league play. Really tremendous turnaround for Josh Holliday and company, especially considering all the injuries we've mentioned. The big question, I think, for them in postseason play is can their pitching hold up? Can you know, anytime you get in those regionals, you got to have your number one get that first win before having to go through the loser's bracket. So that's key for me is can they get enough pitching to get to maybe super and then who knows after that. So they play Arizona State tonight on Saturday at 8:00. It'll be on ESPN2, so a national broadcast there for Cowboy baseball. And I think we can all take a deep breath. Everything is not – the sky is not falling like we once thought. So credit to Josh Holliday and company. This was interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say, because you mentioned that up, that it's on ESPN2 tonight. It's going to be an Elite 3 TV night tonight, Carson. We've got Lakers Thunder I know a lot of people care about that game. Far fewer people care about the Colorado Avalanche taking on the Minnesota Wild, but that'll get a side screen for me. And then Oklahoma State, Arizona State, and all of these games start at 7:30, 8 o'clock. I mean, that's going to be an elite. I'll probably start them all late. I'll record them all, put kiddo to bed, and start them all at like 8:45, 9 o'clock, and just dissolve into my couch for like 2.5 hours and watch all three of those games. It's going to be glorious.
Now, how do you have the bandwidth to be watching hockey with all your hoops and all your other your golf watching? How do you have time for hockey now?
You know, I got really into hockey probably around COVID time. Our friends in Colorado that we go skiing with throughout the winter, they're diehard Avalanche fans, and they got me into it, and I really fell in love with this team. A couple years later, they won the Cup in 22, and now they've just kind of been treading water as one of the best teams in the league. But hockey's a little more random than basketball. If you're the best team in basketball, you can just beat somebody in 7 games. You need some puck luck in hockey. So they haven't won it since, but they're going to win it this year. Being a Thunder fan and an Avs fan is the best. They both ran away with the one seeds this season. They're young. They've both got the best players in the world on their team. They're both 6-0 so far in the playoffs. Like, it's just, I'm living a very charmed spring sports existence as a fan.
Man, I actually grew up watching a lot of hockey. Like, I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. It was just on ESPN. I know the TV contracts have improved here lately, but those Detroit Red Wing, Colorado Avalanche bench-clearing brawls. You had Chris Osgood, the goalie for the Red Wings, fighting Patrick Waugh from the Avs. Yeah. Oh, just I didn't think it got much better. I used to play like the NHL like 99 on like N64. Man, I used to love all that. Yeah, maybe not that old. I never had Dreamcast. I had 64 and I had Sega Genesis. That's when Pavel Bure from the Canucks on NHL 94 was deadly on the wraparound. Nobody could stop the wraparound with Pavel Bure. That was my dude. But I couldn't name 5 hockey players anymore. That's sad.
I'm like at the peak of my hockey fandom in my life. I could I won't put everybody through this, but I could probably name 50 off the top of my head.
I always liked the Red Wings. Just love their uniforms. I was a big Ferris Bueller Stay Off movie fan, and he wears a Gordie Howe jersey in that, his buddy Cameron does, which you probably haven't seen Ferris Bueller, right?
Correct.
You haven't seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
I was
that
off
is
that
like
day.
A classic among classics.
I know. I'm the worst. I just like at this point, am I going to go back and watch it? It's 2026. Am I really going to go back and watch it at this point?
Well, I think I understand why you haven't seen any movies. You got 3 screens and you watch hockey. You probably watch F1 as well. You have no time to watch movies. You got too many TVs going on sports. Too much sports
when
watching.
Did Ferris Bueller's Day Off came out in 1986. I was born in 1992.
I was born in 84, so I was 2 when it came out, you know? Just a classic. Yeah.
Well, I can't use that totally as my excuse. Caddyshack was made in 1980, and Caddyshack's one of my all-time favorite movies, so.
Yeah, it looks like it was made in 1971. It looks so old, but
it does look very old.
Let's bring it back to Oklahoma State here. The home and home with Alabama is no more. We kind of thought this might happen with the SEC finally, and I mean finally going to a 9-game conference schedule. They've been rigging the system this entire time. I've been saying it. Like, they've been playing 8 conference games, which is just, again, one less loss preserves your top teams. They've been no more gaining the system from the SEC, which means Oklahoma State will not play Alabama. And much to my happiness, they had a team from the Big Ten. I'd much rather go beat up on the Big Ten, Colby, than play Alabama. What about you? They get Michigan State now with new head coach Pat Fitzgerald, who, of course, coached for Northwestern for so long. And Michigan State's really down right now. We'll have to see what they are once they play. But what'd you make of dropping Bama? I think we kind of expected this, right?
Yeah, I think so. Good for SEC for finally going to 9. I know you've been harping on that for as long as I can remember. Since I've been doing the show, you've been ripping the SEC for only playing 8 conference games. Glad that they've gone to 9. Look, I think Oklahoma State and the ability to score points over the next few years, an Oklahoma State-Alabama series could have been a ton of fun, but I understand why they needed to clear the space. And I like having Michigan State on the schedule. It's kind of one of those second-tier Big Ten teams. You're not bringing Ohio State to town, Michigan, Penn State, one of those schools. But Michigan State's still a nice non-conference opponent. That game will look good scrolling across the bottom line. So, yeah, I'm in favor of this game. I don't know. It doesn't strike me as like a destination road trip like Eugene would have been. I didn't get to go to Eugene. Kiddo's too young. But even when she's older, I don't know that East Lansing is going to do it for me in terms of a road trip.
No, not top of the mind. But it's perfect in terms of, like you said, resume. I've been advocating this for a really long time. Just give me the mid-tier Big Ten team every year in non-conference. Give me the Illinois of the world. Give me the Minnesotas of the world. Give me the Michigan State now. They used to be a tougher out with D'Antonio back in the day, but yeah, bring me Michigan State. So I think it's a really smart addition, and that adds to – they have series set also with Arkansas, which I think is another really good local opponent right down the road from Tulsa for all of our Tulsa listeners and fans. They have Arkansas in 27 and 32 and 33. And then they have Nebraska, another mid-tier Big Ten team. Bring me all the mid-tier Big Ten teams and a little history there as well. with Nebraska having played in the Big 12 for so long. 34 and 35 is the years they'll play Nebraska. But, hey, I like this a lot. Good job by Chad Weiber, good by the school, and good job SEC finally joining the rest of the country in terms of playing 9 conference games.
Yeah, I'm going to need Eric Morris to still be here when Nebraska comes to town, and I'm going to need Oklahoma State to be really good when Michigan State and Nebraska comes to town. Just for you and I and for this podcast, because we need to be able to make fun of the Big Ten. And if we lose any of those four games, if we lose to Michigan State either time or Nebraska either time, it's going to hurt my soul and my ability to really rip on the middle to lower tier of that conference.
You know what's funny, though, is like I'm not worried about it at all now with Eric Morris. I think it's going to be like vintage OSU is going to light up this big, slow, lumbering power eye formation team. They're going to line up in the shotgun and spread, you know, 5 wide, and they're gonna be like, oh my God, what is happening? What are we going to do? Get them out in space. I can't wait. I'm not even worried about it. I'm already probably trying to wager on the 2032 matchup with, you know, I'm already trying to wager on it.
I forgot Fitzgerald landed the Michigan State job. The whole hullabaloo at Northwestern, and they did a big investigation and found out that was just all nonsense and fabricated, and he won a big lawsuit against the university. And, then he got hired on at Northwestern. So pretty interesting route for Fitzgerald to make his way from Chicago to East Lansing.
Yeah, and you always wonder how good of a job did he really do there at Northwestern? Like, it's Northwestern. I think it's a tough place to win, of course. But he was kind of one of those coaches that kind of lived off, you know, early success, right? I didn't feel like he had done a whole lot at Northwestern lately. But I think it's a decent hire. Michigan State certainly could do a lot. It's hard to do much worse than the Tucker hire that they made. Mel Tucker, that was not a good hire at all. So we'll have to see. But
It's hard to do worse than the Tucker hire. It's impossible to do worse than the Tucker contract extension.
Well, that was just insane, and that's why they are where they are.
Insane.
But maybe Tom Izzo could coach football too. Maybe he could coach both sports. He's just still trucking along.
That's crazy. I mean, I remember Tom Izzo, like when I was a kid, like a kid, I remember Tom Izzo being talked about as like the Final Four guru, like, oh, just take Michigan State to get to the Final Four. And now I have a kid, and he's still out here just doing it with Michigan State.
Yeah, I appreciate everyone that's watching on YouTube. Be sure to fire some questions here in the comment section, and we'll get to it here shortly. A couple things to wrap up here, though, Colby. You know, you've heard of TDS, Trump derangement syndrome. It's turned into TDS Thunder derangement syndrome. It doesn't matter what occurs in the basketball game. It doesn't matter that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shot 3 free throws. The derangement is just centered on the Thunder foul bait and are bad for the league, and they foul every time down the court. And it's taken on a life of its own to where it doesn't even matter what happens in the game, Colby.
Look, the Lakers could shoot 60 free throws tonight, and the Thunder could shoot 10. The Thunder is still going to win that game by 18. This is a non-competitive series between the best team in the world and quite frankly, junior varsity. Like, without Luka, the Lakers are junior varsity. They also lost Jared Vanderbilt the other night because the bone in his pinky finger was sticking through the skin. That's why, if you saw the video of the Thunder bench reacting to that injury, that's what it was. His finger was laid off sideways, and the bone was sticking out. Yeah, just... this is not a competitive series. I knew that Thunder hate was going to reach its peak during Thunder Lakers. It won't get higher than this because the Lakers have a massive fan base and they think that they should win everything. They're not any good. This is a terrible team. That's why I told you last week when we were on. No, it's not going to five. It's not going to be a gentleman's sweep. They've got nothing that they can do against Oklahoma City. I mean, Shea gets a goofy foul. Shea was laying on the floor the other night. Marcus Smart tripped over him, fell to the ground, maybe put a little bit of Marcus Flair on it, and got Shea called for a foul. Shea had four, had to sit the entire third quarter, and it didn't matter. Thunder going on a big run. The Thunder are so good, Carson, that they've made Laker fans want to quit watching basketball. Like, they just don't want to watch anymore because the Thunder are so good. Look, I'm sorry that you're not any good. Watch in the next round when there's an actual good team who can be competitive with Oklahoma City. The Lakers are not that. The Spurs will be competitive with Oklahoma City, and the Knicks will be competitive with Oklahoma City. The Thunder will win both of those series, but those are competitive basketball teams. The Lakers are not that.
See, I disagree a little bit. Like, I know they've won the first two games by 18, but they've done an unbelievable job on SGA. You never see SGA have two games back-to-back of this low of totals and everything. I think they've really made the games really hard on Oklahoma City. And they've been close games. The first game was a close game in the fourth quarter. And this, I know they blew kind of things wide open in the third, but it was still 10, 11, 12 going into the fourth. I think for what they have without Luka, like, they've done an unbelievable job of making this series competitive, even though they are down 2-0. And I think the Thunder were very fortunate in game two with Shea in foul trouble to go on that run that they did. Now, of course, you got to give A.J. Mitchell and just, again, like you mentioned, the sheer depth that they have credit because they haven't really needed Shea, which is, I think, a testament to their roster, especially without – it still kind of boggles my mind they don't have J-Dub and are doing this. Like, any other team in the league without their second-best player like would not just be rolling along like this, and they've really done it all year.
Yeah, the Lakers have done a really good job, and they've been totally non-competitive in games one and two in the fourth quarter. It's just,
they were competitive.
Not in the fourth quarter. They were competitive.
They pulled away late in game one and pretty late in game two as well. The final scores were pretty misleading in terms of the run of play, in terms of each quarter, what the scores are. Again, the final score is ultimately what happened. I don't mean to downplay that, but if you watch the games, like, they made life pretty tough on the Thunder. They have.
Was there ever a moment when you thought Oklahoma City could lose either game?
Wasn't
for me.
When they were down at half in game two, I said, well, I mean, I still thought the Thunder would win at that point, but if they keep passing to Lou Dort in the corner and he keeps clanking them, I was going to get nervous. I didn't think they were going to lose, but when they were down at halftime, I was impressed with the job the Lakers had done. I was.
Hey, also, can we use this moment to juxtapose a Sooner and a Cowboy who played against each other about 6 years ago? That'd be one Mr. Cade Cunningham and one Mr. Austin Reeves. Cade is unbelievable. He's putting up just godlike numbers. He's elevating himself into a different conversation in terms of NBA stardom with what he did the final three games against Orlando, the first two games against Cleveland. I think Detroit's going to win that series, and then I think ultimately the Knicks will beat him in the conference finals, but we'll see. I'm also biased toward my preseason prediction. My preseason prediction was Thunder over Knicks, and I've never wavered, so I'm sticking with it now. Cade is just simply unbelievable. Austin, on the other hand, is the world's biggest crybaby. The audacity to huddle around the refs after the game was over. I mean, I think I was texting you about it. I was texting like three or four people about it. I'm like, the Lakers did not actually just have a huddle on the court with the refs. Cade was better than Austin in college. Cade got the better of him whenever they met. I was there in Norman whenever he dropped 40 on Austin Reeves. And now the NBA playoffs are playing themselves out, and Austin is making a fool out of himself and embarrassing himself, his team, and his fan base, while Cade is elevating himself into a completely different stratosphere. So this is a good day to poke fun at a Sooner while propping up a Cowboy.
It's wild. Like, Austin Reeves to me is probably the most surprising person to make it in the NBA of anyone I've ever covered or watched in college. Like, I didn't think this guy would remotely make a roster, much less turn into what he is. So it's a credit to him, but you're right. He does the things that everyone thinks Shea does in terms of foul baiting and grifting and all these things of trying to manipulate the refs. And you're so right. Like, Imagine if the Thunder huddled the referees at midcourt after losing a playoff game. Like, imagine the national discourse if that occurred. It's derangement syndrome. It's insane. And the Lakers have led the league in free throws three of the last 4 years. They were second the year they weren't. No one foul baits more than them. It's just like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when I get on Twitter and it's just this nonstop cavalcade. You even got like respectable people like Jay Williams on ESPN calling the Thunder unwatchable. What exactly is unwatchable about the Thunder other than they play generationally great defense, team defense? It's not just Wembanyama standing in there swatting things around himself or Ibaka or whoever. And they're self-made. They don't have hardly any lottery picks that are playing. They have like two, and they're both on the back end of the lottery other than Chet. Chet's the only top five pick they have. You got Queso at 10, and then you got Shea at 12 was when they were drafted. But just totally organic, not Kevin deciding to go join a 60-win team. It's proof, Colby, if you're the best team in the world, it's going to bring out the haters. And I love it. Yeah. I mean, for little Oklahoma City to be the hated team, and can you imagine if the Thunder get the number one pick tomorrow too? That would be just cherry on top.
Ooh, that's tomorrow. Yeah, I forgot tomorrow. That was tomorrow. That's beautiful.
There's no way the NBA is going to let them get the first pick, right? I mean, they let Dallas get the first pick. You can't tell me it's not rigged.
I truly don't believe it's rigged only because they put sports writers and media people in the room and watch them do it. I don't know how they would rig it. I don't know how it would happen, despite how crazy the results seem some of the time. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, there will be a day where we'll long for all this hate. The Thunder won't be good forever. They might be good for 5, 10, 20 more years. I don't know how long they're going to be great, but it will be forever. And when that day comes, we're going to look back on this era fondly. We're going to be like, do you remember whenever the internet hated us because nobody could beat us, so they just looked for every possible reason to blame anybody? It's just – yeah, it's great. It's the best. Where was this comment I wanted to read? Oh, Miles Jenkins again. The national media, but downgrading the Thunder, classic, makes me want to puke, Carson. By the way, if Bill Simmons had an editor, then he would know that J-Dub didn't play in that game the other night. Did you see that clip? We're supposed to respect this moron's basketball opinion. With all due respect to Bill Simmons, which is about this much, he is a caricature of what he used to be. He has turned into a caricature of himself. To sit up there after the Thunder game and be like, well, this is why I couldn't get myself to vote Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for MVP. Look, he goes out in the third quarter. J-Dub only plays 14 minutes, and they still run away with it. J-Dub's been out for weeks, you moron. God,
he told on himself, right? Like he even like clapped back at this dude on Twitter trying to say he had a brain fart. Do brain farts like make you blind to where they showed
it's not how that works?
They showed J-Dub in street clothes 100 times in the last game. He's been out for four straight playoff games or three straight playoff games. Like he's been out this entire series. Like just admit you don't watch the games, dude. And that's a little scary, too. If I'm the NBA, I'm like, we got people voting on awards that affect their salaries and their bonuses that don't even watch. It's just embarrassing. He showed – and here's the thing about Bill Simmons. Like, he was a Seattle apologist. He was a Seattle sympathizer is the better way to put it when the franchise was moved from Seattle to Oklahoma City. And, again, I covered the Thunder back when the story I was told was Bill went to the Thunder practice facility – to write about them, to just, you know, glad hand with Sam Presti and meet everyone. And if you've ever covered a Thunder practice, they stick you in this like waiting room for seemingly forever. It was one of the most frustrating things I've ever been a part of. Well, you don't know when they're gonna let you in, when to talk to everybody, and you're like herded cattle. Well, Bill didn't get this red carpet ESPN treatment. He got stuck in there with the media, the local media, and had to sit there and look at his watch like the rest of us. I wasn't there for this, but that's what I was told at the time. And I think he even spoke about it on his podcast at the time. I remember listening to it. And ever since then, his Seattle hate has combined with his personal axe to grind against Sam Presti and the Thunder. He's taken little pot shots every chance he's gotten. He's given them no credit all the way up to them winning the freaking world championship. Now he's trying to trade A.J. Mitchell. Did you see his trade proposal could the Thunder trade A.J. Mitchell, who is like the best contract in the league, who is probably the best sixth man in the league, who's probably borderline going to be an all-star point guard in his career? for a lottery pick that will make more money than AJ Mitchell that might not be half as good. Like, Bill is just, you're right, caricature of his former self is the best way to put it.
Yeah, he's tried to trade J-Dub at various points throughout this season too. You know, Giannis, stuff like that. He's trying to trade people away. He hates the Oklahoma City Thunder. He went on this whole diatribe earlier this year about how they're the villains of the league. They shouldn't even have the team. Send them back to Seattle. He's a clown. He's an absolute clown, and he told on himself with his little J-Dub slip up the other night. So I'm glad he did, because I've been saying he's a clown all along. One of my best friends who I talk basketball with constantly always listens to Bill Simmons. He used to actually like him, and now he hate listens, but he gets bothered by some of the stuff Bill says. And I'm like, dude, you cannot let this bother you. This dude is a clown who is just doing this for the engagement. He just hates Oklahoma City. So, yeah, I'm glad he told on himself. We can move on. Oklahoma City's awesome. Cade is awesome. I picked the Knicks over the Pistons, but, Carson, there's a non-zero chance that we're watching Cade Cunningham play an NBA Finals game in Oklahoma City. And, whoo, buddy, would that be a lot of fun.
That would be a ton of fun. And, man, that would be fantastic. But also, too, like, you'd hate to just beat down. You hope you don't create too much scar tissue for Cade getting just run off the floor in that manner. Although, hey, he'd be like gravy, right? Getting there. I'm far more worried about the Spurs, man. Did you watch Wembanyama last night? Like, I'm terrified. I'm scared.
That Minnesota team's out of ammo. Thunder in five.
I don't know how you handle Wembanyama, dude. He's shooting threes. That guy is just a freak among freaks.
Elbow in the ribs, Hartenstein. Elbow in the ribs. Kenrich Williams.
Is J-Dub coming
run
back?
Run the fouls up. Yeah, he'll be back for the Spurs series.
Okay, good.
You can book it. I'm reporting that with zero sources and no inside information. I'm reporting J-Dub will return for game one of the San Antonio series.
I hope you don't mean J-Will like Bill Simmons did, apparently.
Yeah, maybe he should listen to Barry Trammell, call him Arkansas and Santa Clara.
Well, I mean, again, you can just – yeah, I love that. I love that Barry just has stuck with that ever since they were drafted.
When they were first drafted, it was kind of cute. I feel like he should have dropped it by now. J-Dub's one of the 15 best players in the world. At this point, I think we could have dropped it, but I thought it was fun initially.
Well, you can't just say Jalen Williams, but, yeah, I guess J-Dub and J-Will is what you should say.
In this state, yeah.
Golf school, goodbye. Let's get to that. Oklahoma State, I believe they're a top seed in their regional, Colby. I'm going to pull up our friends at Echo Contracting. Our golf school goodbye is brought to you by Echo Contracting. They're a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs, right, going right the first time. Call or text a quote today at 405-279-8444 or email info@echo-contracting.com. Appreciate Echo Contracting sponsoring the pod as we go through the spring sports, as we gear into really, you know, the postseason in golf. Colby, it's here. Preston Stout, having fresh off his three straight Big 12 championships, that now Oklahoma State will move on to being the top seed in their regional. I think we fully expect them to make it through that, but we'll have to see how they do in regionals going into what we expect to be the national championships, and we'll see if they have that matchup with Auburn and Jackson Koivin, who everyone's fired up about as well.
Yeah, so I was listening to our good buddy Kyle Porter. He was on with Pat Mayo, which is those two of my favorite voices in golf. So listening to them do a crossover episode previewing the PGA Championship was fantastic. And they were talking about Jackson Koivin and how special Jackson Koivin is. And they were talking about whether he's going to be on the President's Cup team this year. It's like, that's the level that Jackson Koivin is viewed at.
Kyle thinks he'll be on the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah. He said he thinks he'll be on the Ryder Cup team, which will be next year in 27, across the pond. Jim Furyk will be the captain. Tiger wasn't able to fulfill his responsibilities to potentially land that gig. So they gave it to Furyk. Maybe it'll be Tiger in 29. We'll see. Stout has a chance to really make a name for himself and really make waves if he can win the national championship, beat Koivin. Best case scenario is you get match play and Stout gets to go heads up against Koivin. Like, yeah, you might get beat because that guy's really, really good. But if Stout goes out and takes him down, I mean, that's an opportunity. You've got to look at it not as a tough day, but as an opportunity to show people what you're made of. And I believe in Preston Stout. Look, I think Jackson Koivin's the best player in the country. His resume is unimpeachable. But Preston Stout is probably the second best player in the country, and I just really want to see those two play golf against each other.
Yeah, I was listening to, again, Andy Johnson, the Fried Egg. He was saying that any other year, everyone would be clamoring about Preston Stout. It's just the fact that he's coming out the same year as Jackson Koivin. And he kind of likened it, and I like this comparison a lot, he likened it to the year that Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa, all three, came out the same year, kind of just a golden kind of graduation class going to the PGA Tour that, you know, as soon as they stepped on the course as rookies, were competing to win. They both, I think Wolf and Hovland both won pretty early in their careers. I know Wolf won like his first season, in fact. And then, of course, Morikawa reeled off two majors. So I really like that comparison a lot. I think those two will be kind of compared in a similar vein as Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa. But Oklahoma State is the top seed at the Marana Regional. They won their 12th national title last season, we all remember, and they're coming off their league record 13th Big 12 title and fourth win of the season at the Big 12 Championship. The other top five seeds joining them will be LSU, Arizona, Alabama, and Duke. So really some schools we've heard a lot making noise at nationals. So kind of a star-studded regional that they are in. But listen to this, Colby. OSU leads the nation with 17 regional titles after their win last year. They've won 8 of 11 regionals they've won 8 regionals in 11 tries under Alan Bratton, including a run of 6 in a row from 16 through 22. And they have qualified for the NCAA championships in 76 of a possible 78 seasons. So again, when people came after me for having the audacity to wonder where we're going, that was only the second time ever they hadn't qualified for the national championships. So just a blip, but worth pointing out. It doesn't happen ever. And Mike McGraw lost his job for it. So I don't mean to go down that road again, but Colby, just shaping up to be, you know, a really strong push for national championship number 13 for OSU.
Yeah, it is. And I really like the regional that they got going out west to Arizona. A couple of reasons. You go out the same time zone, similar weather, similar grasses, similar styles of golf. Like, you're not going to Ohio or Pennsylvania to play your regional out east on what's probably going to be a ton of bent grass and stuff like that. You're going to go out west, and you're going to play a course that's going to be similar to what they'll see at Omni La Costa out in California. So, I like the draw. I think that they'll advance through the regional. I think undoubtedly they'll make the batch play. I shouldn't say undoubtedly. There's a lot of good teams in college golf. You've got to play well to be in those top eight seeds to make the match play. But just get yourself in the top eight, and then anybody can beat anybody in match play. Honestly, if they're eight and Auburn's one, bring it. The one seed loses all the time. I want Oklahoma State Auburn. It will be incredible television.
How's that work? Could they guarantee that Koivin and Stout match up? Don't they like go back and forth like snake draft almost? Or not snake, but just back and forth?
Yes, they do. And if either coach didn't pair those guys up against each other, whoever chooses not to do that is a coward.
Do they talk about it before? How do they know if they
– That's a great question.
You just put your number one guy first? Is that how they typically do it? I can't remember.
That's a great question. I don't know if it's a blind draw or if it's like you put a name and the other coach matches. But either way, like – Bratton and I don't know the Auburn coach's name off the top of my head. They've got to get together. We've got to make sure that Stout and Koivin are playing against each other. Golf Channel has to step in and say, guys, we have to make sure Stout and Koivin are playing against each other. This is going to be a ratings boon for all the college golf fans out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there before. I was at Karsten when they hosted, and it looked to me like both coaches had sheets the year that OSU won it at home, 2018.
Okay.
To me, it looked like both coaches had sheets, and they were just kind of reading off of them. So to me, it sounded predetermined. Now, I can't recall if they just put, you know, their one through four, one through five guys. I can't remember if that was the case at all. But I'm sure they'll make that work. I'm sure the Golf Channel will step in before they announce, hey, what number's Stout? Oh, what number's Koivin? Well, let's switch that to where they're the same. But the coaches ultimately have that decision, right?
If Auburn and Oklahoma State get matched up, I'll call Brentley and I'll make sure that that's going to happen, and I'll ask him the entire format as to how those seeds are determined. I know last year, since they're playing out in California, the golf, it doesn't end until like 9 o'clock our time. I seem to remember, did we hop on and do an emergency pod last year after that Eric Lee pitch at like 10 o'clock at night? I think we did.
Oh, yeah, we definitely did. I remember. We did a live show right afterwards. I mean, it's not every day they win a national title, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Good stuff.
Did I lose you? Are you there? I think Colby's
still
there.
Oh, can you still hear me?
Yep, I got
you. Hello, hello, hello.
I got you. Can you hear me?
Okay, cool.
Any questions for the people still watching on YouTube? Appreciate everybody being in here. Appreciate it. One last thing here. Did you see the Chad Weiberg thing on the private equity? OSU does not intend to use this Redbird credit line as there are double-digit interest rates. Like, I don't – like, I understand the Big 12 wanting to get some private equity funding, but it doesn't look like any school is going to take them up on it. I just thought that was kind of just a weird – wrinkle. Again, I think this kind of speaks to Brett Yormark just throwing everything he can against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, they're trying things in this era where you need more money. I imagine the amount of time it took to negotiate this deal and the people at Redbird and stuff were expecting everybody to hop in. It seems to me, the more I read on it, you're just financing your NIL, like having a car payment or a mortgage. Like, you're just financing your NIL and then paying them back double-digit interest rates. I mean, yeah, sounds like a pretty sweet deal for Redbird, and I guess in the short term it could potentially be good for the universities, but I think that you might be mortgaging your future for your now if you take them up on this offer. And I don't know, I'd have to read more into, you know, Utah had their own deal that they struck, but I think that there was some equity involved there, whereas with Redbird there was no equity, it was essentially just a loan. So I actually kind of liked it whenever I came out and heard him say that. I know some people are like, get the money, build a stack roster, you know, prop up all the sports. I get that. Oklahoma State's doing well financially. Oklahoma State was just able to fire Mike Gundy, bring in Eric Morris, lay that whole other staff off, pay this new staff, get all the best players in from North Texas, get other Power 5 guys in on the football side. We've got four high-level recruits coming in men's basketball. Oklahoma State women's basketball is the talk of the town in the offseason. They brought in all of the big names. Goff kept their entire national championship team together from a year ago. Like, the money that's being spent, it's getting thrown around everywhere. So I was glad to hear that Oklahoma State is not financing the NIL and going to be paying whatever, 12% to Redbird for the next 30 years so that we can get a one more left guard.
Yep. So appreciate everyone joining us. One last question here from OSU KU fan too. You got to pick one, man. You can't pick OSU and Kansas, can you? Y'all confident that baseball has a postseason run? I'm not confident at all. I don't really know what to expect. But like Colby and I mentioned, I think baseball is very much like hockey, where, you know, in hockey you have the hot goaltender, you can go far. When the baseball team is clicking, that's who typically wins regionals and really typically wins the national championship. Whoever gets hot while they're in Omaha, it's not always the best team. It's typically not the best team. In fact, it's always who's hottest. So hopefully they can keep it rolling. But I certainly feel a lot better about it than I did, you know, several weeks, if not months ago.
Yeah, it also depends to me on how you're defining postseason run. Are we including the Big 12 tournament in that? Because Oklahoma State has had a lot of success in that tournament, and they've proven themselves as one of the better teams in the Big 12 over the last 6 weeks or so. So, yeah, I think that they could go on a run at the Big 12 tournament, which I really miss being in Oklahoma City, but that's neither here nor there. We don't need to relitigate that. As far as anything beyond that, the regional success has been a little fewer and further between. So we're just going to cross our fingers and hope that there's a postseason run in them to a super, but don't know. J-Rod, which non-football sport are you more excited for the upcoming 26-27 season? Non-football sport, I'm the most excited for, Carson, with the number one overall pick, I draft wrestling. On to you.
That's who I was going to pick, dang it. Wrestling. There's only one answer here. It's wrestling. Much as I would like to get behind Steve Lutz and the basketball program, a lot to be seen, a lot of new faces. Got a McDonald's All-American coming in. A lot to be excited about there. But David Taylor is in that roster that he's built. You got Drayshawn. I was just looking at the roster. You know, Marshall Scott, go to Pistols Firing blog and read it. They were writing about, you know, they're predicting the lineups for next year. And the one person they lost due to eligibility was the heavyweight. And they replaced him with the number one recruit in the nation at heavyweight, who won four state championships in the state of Iowa and won the vaunted Fargo tournament, the National Junior Wrestling Tournament up in Fargo. I remember my friends that wrestled in high school. That was like the mecca of all the studs who are studs of high school wrestling. Even just to make it to Fargo and wrestle there, you got to be a stud, and this kid won it. So they've reloaded in spots that they need. They're going to have some weight shifting where I think Vega is going to move up a weight class. But make no mistake, all gears up for wrestling. I will be a Gallagher for a duel next year.
Yeah, women's basketball probably makes the podium for me too, just because of the litany of transfers. Like, it's just unbelievable how many points per game J.C. Hoyt brought in the offseason. Like, I'm fascinated to see if Oklahoma State women are playing like 94 to 92 basketball games next year, because if they are, that could be really fun to watch.
Number one portal class in the country, according to ESPN, yeah. J.C. Hoyt and OSU. Don't need your Redbird capital. We got J.C. Hoyt knocking on doors, getting in boardrooms, getting all that NIL money put together. Really, enough can't be said about the job J.C. Hoyt's done this offseason, revamping that roster, and a team that, again, made the tournament last year. So she's got that program headed in the right directions.
I was just going to say, OSU KU fan said he was a KU fan due to his brother, and that he bought Bill Self a beer once at Murphy. So
I'm sure Bill's spent a few nights at Murphy's back in his day. That's a cool story.
I remember here's my Murphy's
fellow
memory.
Fellow
Edmund
Bulldog,
was,
Bill Self.
Yep. So when I was in school, Justin Gilbert had finished up his last season, 2013 maybe, and he went to the NFL Combine. He came home. And like I watched him that afternoon at the NFL Combine, and then he showed up at Murphy's that night, and he walked in and he still had all of his Combine gear on. Like, he wanted everybody to know he came straight from the Combine. Like, he had number 4 Gilbert on his back.
Oh,
and I was
my
like,
God.
I was like, that's equal parts cool and kind of, you know, look at me.
I can top that.
Okay, hit me.
I was in college. I was at South Padre Island, Texas, on the beach, you know, with all the flags, all the fraternity flags, all the schools, all the universities. And I saw Vince Young wearing his jersey on the beach. He was wearing his Vince Young Texas jersey on the, he wanted everyone there to know that Vince Young was there on the beach. And this is before he was like a star. I think he was a freshman. Maybe it was that sophomore year where he split time with Chance Mock, I believe was the quarterback who stunk. But total like high school move, wearing your jersey to the college beach, you know. But hey, it's Vince Young. He can probably do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, it's, you know, my wife and I, we just have the saying with young people whenever they do things, no frontal lobe. You know, that frontal lobe doesn't fully develop until 25. So anytime we see a young person doing things that like you would never do in your 30s, we're just like, no frontal lobe, no frontal lobe. It's all good.
I kind of get it from Gilbert's perspective. It's like, hey, I'm going to the NFL, ladies. I'm gonna.
Yeah.
I can pay all the tabs here. So, you know, just you and, know, a little different than just wearing your college jersey.
Maybe I should have had my combine gear on because I didn't have nearly as many people coming up and talking to me as Justin Gilbert did.
No, I probably didn't either. But hey, appreciate everyone watching on YouTube. Appreciate all of our listeners listening after the fact on our podcast page. Colby, really enjoyed it. Have a great Mother's Day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Appreciate everyone joining us. Happy Mother's Day to my wife, my mom, and all the great mothers out there. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. As always, go Pokes!